Welcome to
America's Cannabis Conversation,
where you can hear experts from all facets of the cannabis business as to what's happening in this exploding industry. Keep yourself informed. Join the conversation. Hello and welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation Quick News Update. I'm your host, Dan Perkins. Trenton, New Jersey. New Jersey Attorney General orders marijuana cases to be dropped following legalization bill signing. The day after New Jersey governors signed bills to legalize and decriminalize marijuana, the state attorney general directed prosecutors to drop cases for cannabis-related offenses and issued separate guidance for police on how to proceed under the updated laws. Prosecutors should stop pursuing cases for certain marijuana conduct that took place prior to the signing of the legislation on February 22nd, the new notice states. Law enforcement were separately informed about what marijuana activity has been made legal and the revised penalties for youth possession and cannabis distribution. The first directive instructs state, county, and municipal prosecutors to dismiss charges pending as of February 22, 2021, for any marijuana offense that is no longer illegal under the state law. Senate hearings. Senator presses Biden Treasury nominee on marijuana as the House omits banking protections in the new COVID-19 bill. In a surprise turn of events, a Democratic senator on Tuesday pressed President Joe Biden's nominee for top Treasury Department role on revising banking rules for marijuana businesses. But at the same time, House Democrats seem to have abandoned, at least for now, efforts to enact the Cannabis Financial Services Reform through the coronavirus relief legislation, despite their concerted push to attach the issue to the COVID bill last year. During a confirmation hearing before the Senate Finance Committee, Senator Catherine Cortez Masteo asked Treasury Deputy Secretary nominee Adewale Adeyemo whether he feels the 2014 Financial Crimes Enforcement Network guidelines should be updated to set expectations for financial institutions to provide services to cannabis-related industries and what steps he would take in the end. He replied, "I'm looking forward, if confirmed, to talking with my colleagues at Treasury about the important issue and thinking through what changes may be needed and doing this in a way that is consistent with the interagency with the President's guidance. In doing that, I look forward to consulting with you and members of this committee on our path forward." Washington, D.C. Feds should not waste resources on marijuana enforcement in legal states, Biden's AG pick Merrick Garland says at his confirmation hearing. President Joe Biden's pick for Attorney General said on Monday that it's not a useful use of limited resources to go after people who are complying with state marijuana laws. He also cited cannabis enforcement as an example of the racially discriminatory impact of the criminal justice system. Judge Merrick Garland, whose views on marijuana policy have been largely unclear to date, said that the issue is a question of prioritization about resources and discretion, and he signaled that the Justice Department would adopt a hands-off policy for most cannabis cases, similar to what was implemented under President Barack Obama if he was confirmed. Our final story deals with really all over the United States. Legal marijuana states see reduced workers' compensation claims, a new study finds. Legalizing marijuana for adult use is associated with an increase in workforce productivity and a decrease in workplace injuries, according to a new study partly funded by the federal government. In a working paper published by the National Bureau of Economic Research, researchers looked at the impact of recreational cannabis legalization on workers' compensation claims among older adults. They found declines in such filings, both in terms of propensity to receive benefits and benefit amounts, in states that have enacted a policy change. These findings run counter to arguments commonly made by the prohibitionists, who have claimed that legalizing marijuana would lead to lower productivity, more occupational hazards, associated costs to business in doing this. In fact, the study indicates that regulating cannabis sales for adults in workplace benefit by enabling older employees ages 40 to 62 to access an alternative treatment option. And that's your American Cannabis Conversation Quick News. I'm Dan Perkins. Let's see who's joining the conversation today. Morgan Fox is the Media Relations Director for the National Cannabis Industry Association, and he's going to talk about what's happening in Washington and how things are moving very rapidly on possible deregulation of cannabis. Next joining us for his second appearance is Erwin Simon, who is the chairman of Tyre, the largest cannabis company in the world, and he's going to talk about evolution of what's happening and change in the cannabis industry. Also joining us is Mike Regan and his partner, who are going to talk about the changes that are taking place in Washington, how they're affecting the cannabis equity markets. And finally, joining us is Big Mike Stramathias, Mr. Cannabis, and he's going to talk about growing media and while it's important to produce high-quality, high-volume crops. So let's join the conversation. I'm Dan Perkins. Welcome back to the conversation, and joining us today is our old friend Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association. And we've been talking to Morgan probably more than anybody else in the industry, and we want to talk today about how we deal with equity, meaning stock, but equity across multiple generationals, races, and ethnic minorities in opportunity in the cannabis business. Welcome, Morgan.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome, sir. In our last show, we just touched on, and didn't have enough time because we ran out of time, we touched a little bit about the differences of how minorities enter into the cannabis business, high cost fees, regulatory biases. So I'm curious, from your association standpoint, how severe are the barriers to entry for minorities getting into the legal cannabis business?
Oftentimes completely insurmountable for anyone that doesn't have a lot of access to capital or deep financial networks or generational wealth. Especially in states that have a limited number of licenses. So even being able to get your foot in the door or be able to get to the licensing process can sometimes be impossible without a significant number of resources that unfortunately have moved away from marginalized communities over the years through both cannabis prohibition and a number of other problematic issues, both cultural and legal. So it's really important to dive into what those barriers of entry are, as well as to provide proactive assistance to people representing marginalized communities in order to help give them a leg up and provide them with the resources that they need to be effective in both the application process and in the actual business operation. And states and localities are doing this to varying degrees, but unfortunately, none of them have been truly successful. So, I think that the fact that this issue is being looked at much more closely in recent years is absolutely vital to overcoming a lot of the injustices caused by prohibition and creating a fair and equitable business environment in the future.
You know, I pride myself on never trying to put my guests on the spot, and I want to ask you a question. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm giving you an observation from my standpoint, and then you can react. It seems to me that when you talk about high barriers and capital being one of those important issues, if you don't have enough money to get through the process and actually open a dispensary, you're probably not going to go anywhere. But that seems to me to be a restriction of the current federal statute that prohibits banks from entering into transaction with illegal cannabis federal level, be legal at the state level. So a great reluctance on the part of the bankers to want to loan money. In addition, I think that there may be some racial prejudice about loaning money for dispensaries to minorities because of the prosecution rates of what have happened in the past. Not making that's right, it's just the fact of life. So with the possibility of significant changes in the law, while it may seem on the surface the ability of banks to be able to loan without fear of criminal prosecution, will they loan money even after the law's changed based on their own bias and prejudice in the loaning process?
Well, that's an absolutely valid question. And, we've seen historically that there absolutely is both overt and covert bias when it comes to banks lending money to people of color and anybody from representing marginalized communities. But as it stands right now, you know, they don't even have the option for you know, good banks that would be willing to do this and don't exhibit you know, implicit bias or racially biased decision making when it comes to loans. And you know, going even further, if we even take loans out of the equation, just the ability to access bank accounts would remove a significant hurdle, as well as greatly decrease costs associated with running a cannabis business, which further decreases the barriers of entry. You know, I'm glad that you brought up you know, implicit bias, because I'm sure that it exists as well in the application processes for legal cannabis business licensing, even if these significant financial barriers to entry are met. So I think it's important that we address these as well as, you know, providing any sort of opportunities and tools that we can, which includes, you know, banking reform. I think that fixing 280E, as well as talking to state level tax officials and getting them to decrease the overall tax rate on cannabis businesses at state and local level, is also important, because you know, the taxes that are placed on cannabis businesses, you know, do also represent a significant barrier to being successful in the industry, even if you're able to get in. And you'll really negatively affect the long-term viability and survivability of businesses. And, you know, we know from, you know, history, both inside and outside the cannabis industry, that these sort of barriers and difficulties have a much greater impact on small businesses and an even greater impact on marginalized communities.
I totally agree with you. And I have looked at what's happened after New Jersey last November passed legalizing recreational marijuana. There were a lot of stories about will states like Maryland and New York and Pennsylvania, all the border states around New York, will they see their residents flocking to New Jersey to buy legal product, and how soon would they start the process of making recreational legal in their states? And that's, I did a story last week where in Delaware, they passed legislation in 3 days through five committees to get something done. But my question, Morgan, is these states that you pointed out, these states that are legalizing cannabis and those who have been in for some period of time, are generating significant amounts, tens of millions of dollars of tax revenues for the state. Would your association consider the possibility of requesting that the states set aside some of the profits to make loans to minority-owned businesses so they can have credit and they can go out and get money to start a business?
Absolutely. I mean, that's definitely one of the portions of a couple of different social equity programs, but unfortunately, we just haven't seen them be enacted yet. You know, I think it's necessary and appropriate for resources to be set aside for not only creating loan programs for social equity applicants, but also you know, educational resources as well to try to level the playing field a little bit. And, you know, unfortunately, these programs, you know, really haven't taken off yet. I think part of it may be just because of general you know, legislative and regulatory slowness, for lack of a better word. But another part of it is lack of funds, which is why I think it's important that when you're looking at cannabis legislation, and particularly the equity and restorative justice components of these programs, that there be some initial funding laid out from state general funds, and you know, when we get to the federal level, from you know, general federal taxation, as opposed to just tying it completely to cannabis generated revenue, because this is a volatile agricultural product, and sometimes it takes a while for these programs to actually be implemented and get up off the ground and start generating tax revenue. And it's important that you know, the community reinvestment and job training and loan programs for equity applicants start as soon as possible once it's, these laws are actually passed. So you know, it's really incumbent on state lawmakers to you know, have you know, mechanisms within this legislation that guarantees funding from their general funds in specific dollar amounts to get these programs up and running prior to implementation of the full legalization laws and the regulatory structures, so that they can get a head start before cannabis tax revenue is even being generated.
Yeah, but I do think that there are new states that have come on in the last year or so who have blown through what everybody thought was going to be their revenue projections. I mean, big time, that the desire for the product has clearly accelerated so that revenue is flowing. I'm curious as to why, if we have this problem of capital, and let me be clear, it isn't just people of minority who have a difficulty with capital. Even white people and Asians and all the other people have difficulty in getting capital. The collapse of the market last year really hurt the ability for people to get capital. Let me move on in the last couple of minutes that we have. Let's talk about the discussions that are going on in Washington legislation. What would be the things that we could watch as the momentum and the direction of where the debate is going?
Well, you know, we've already had a pretty big signal from Majority Leader Schumer and other members of the Senate leadership that this issue is going to become more a priority for that chamber. You know, I think that the biggest signal is going to be when hearings start getting scheduled. You know, I think it remains to be seen when that's going to happen, but I would be very surprised if they didn't start being scheduled within the next couple of months. You know, sometimes that can mean that a bill is going to start rolling through approval through committees pretty quickly. Sometimes it means that it'll just be an informational hearing. But either way, you know, actually having scheduled hearings on the docket for the House and Senate will be a big indicator of exactly where this issue stands in terms of the priority list.
And do you have a sense of what committees might call public hearings in the House or the Senate?
Well, in the Senate, I think that we're probably going to see hearings in the Banking Committee relatively quickly. It might be even the first hearing that gets called. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw justice hearings get called in both chambers. You know, in terms of just in the House, I think it's kind of difficult to say right now, but Energy and Commerce will probably be up there as well as maybe a Small Business Administration Committee.
Okay. So, unfortunately, it went by quickly. We're out of time. Morgan, please tell people how they can follow this issue through your organization.
All right. We can be reached at thecannabisindustry.org. We're also available on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you're interested in learning more about diversity and equity in cannabis, we actually have a regularly scheduled webinar called the Catalyst Conversations and a regularly scheduled podcast called the Diversity Report. So if you go to our website, you can find those. I highly recommend checking out those resources if you're interested in this issue.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us today, Morgan. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks again.
You're welcome. If you missed any of this really important interview with Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association, please go to W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section, and you'll be able to listen to this interview and lots of interviews that Morgan has done. We'll be right back. It's time for you to make a decision about your health care. It's time for you to make a decision about how you're going to protect yourself against viruses. Isn't it time to make sure you have the strongest immune system you possibly can? Isn't it time to make a decision to buy CV Sciences, CV Acute, and CV Defense to help you build the strongest antiviral immune system you can? It's time for you to go to empoweryourself.info and purchase CV Acute and CV Defense and take charge of your health care.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back to the conversation. And joining us today is Erin Simon, who is going to be the CEO of a newly merged operation that will carry the name Tilray. And we want to talk to him about what's going on in the business. Erin, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm fascinated with the idea that this was a merger of two companies that created, in terms of revenue, the largest cannabis company in the world at the moment. But it appears that there may be other mergers behind you that are nipping at your heels. Is merger where this country's going to go and where these companies are going to go going forward?
Good question. I think you come back and you look at every industry today and you look at the world today. Consolidation is more the word, and it's got to be consolidation for the right reason, just not a merger or an acquisition just to say, hey, I did an acquisition or I did a merger. In our case, you know, when I took over Aphria 2 years ago, there was lots of challenges. And with that, the first and foremost was to make sure that Aphria was stable, the foundation was strong, there was a real good strategy, and that we emerged to be the number one supplier in regards to sales share and EBITDA in Canada. As I stepped back and I looked at Aphria from a global footprint and what did I need to do, Canada's a great country. I'm Canadian, grew up there. There's limitations to what you can do and how big it can grow. Mm-hmm. So with that, because cannabis is not legal federally yet in the U.S., I couldn't go out and buy another Canadian cannabis company. I did go out and buy a U.S. beer company, alcohol company. I couldn't go out and buy anything in Europe other than a medical business. So Tilray was absolutely the right way to go. It was a U.S. domiciled company. It had a very good medical platform in Canada. It had one of the top medical platforms in Europe. They had a U.S. footprint with Manitoba Harvest. And with that, there was lots of synergies to bring the two together. So it's a consolidation. It was a reverse merger. It allowed me to don't re-domicile back into the U.S., which there's, you know, advantages to that. And it set up a company that has tremendous growth opportunities around the world and also now has a footprint in the U.S. When legalization does happen in the U.S., there's a good opportunity for us to be, you know, at the top of the pack there.
Erwin, we had on our show a CEO of a cannabis research company a couple of weeks ago, and she was talking about the changes because of the UN resolution on decriminalization of cannabis, a boon to business in Europe. But when I asked her about sale of recreational, she said, no, the boom in Europe is going to be companies that are going to get in business to do business in the United States, that the United States is still the greatest opportunity, at least for now, in the world. Where do you see your combined companies going?
So, again, she is absolutely right. If you come back and look at the United States and you look at Canada today, you know, it's a $6 billion business there. You look at the U.S., it's a $60 billion business. And then you look at all the other derivative products that could come from it in drinks, food products, pet food, et cetera. So the U.S. major, major opportunity, and also the U.S. is a major, major opportunity in regards to medical. And I come back and say between medical, between consumer products, and between recreational, it's a $100 billion opportunity. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I come back and I'm still fascinated by the opportunities in Europe. I think medical is legal in a lot of countries today, whether it's Germany, whether it's Portugal, whether it's in other countries. Israel, you know, I'm told is going to legalize. Germany's going to legalize. There's 600 million people in Europe. So Europe, if you come back and look at it from a size standpoint, it is absolutely bigger than the U.S. So I think there's tremendous opportunities in Europe. And I think, again, and personally, I built a consumer packaged goods business in the U.S. and the rest of the world. That was a $3.5 billion company. So with that, I absolutely agree with her. The U.S. is, you know, where some of the bigger prize money is. But on the other hand, you can't sit back and just wait for legalization to happen, okay? You know, the Biden administration is not going to be on the agenda for the first 100 days. And, you know, we got to go through the Safe Bank Act. We got to go through the MORE Act. We got to go through legalization. Then we'd have to go through once, if it was legalized, how do you run it by the states versus the federal government? No different than alcohol when it was legalized. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot before I believe I'm going to be able to sell cannabis in the U.S. from a recreational standpoint. I think we're a few years out. But what's going to be important, though, is if we can get them the Safe Bank Act passed or the MORE Act, which is decriminalization, that's going to be a big movement because it allows you from a commerce standpoint in regards to dealing with banks. It allows you to ultimately institutional investors invest in your company, and a lot can happen in regards to the financial ways once banking is approved, because now it's very difficult to get institutions. It's very difficult to deal with U.S. banks because of legalization and not being legal.
Right. You know, you mentioned something which I thought was very interesting because of some of your contemporaries that I've had on the show don't seem to have the same kind of vision you have. You, if I'm understanding you correctly, you seem to think that the medical market is a very important market to the long-term success of the industry and of your company. There are a lot of people who don't think we need a medical market, that the adult use will take care of the medical market. Where do you come down on that?
I am big on the medical market. I think there's a lot of opportunities, and I see it. I hear it about patients today in regards to anxiety, in regards to pain, in regards to sleep. I see it in regards to patients that are suffering from cancer and on, you know, harsh chemotherapy. So I absolutely think there's a lot of research and development, and that's something I'm behind to stay focused on the medical world and would be a part of it. I think it's a major replacement from opioids, and so medical will be something that we're going to absolutely focus on.
I was speaking to Irwin before we went on the air today and about looking at some of the research on his company and the various medical research projects that he's got going on, which is amazing. We are so far behind the curve in what we should have been doing if we had had a more freer market and less criminal proceedings. We could be doing a lot more work in the areas that you've talked about with medical research. Thank God we're starting to do it today, but we're really behind the curve.
And absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, in Europe, epilepsy. We have seen in regards to kids having 300 plus seizures a day, they're down to two or three a day. We have seen in regards to anxiety in research working with hospitals there. So I happen to think medical is a very, very important part. And the good news is a lot of companies are dismissing it, and I see that's our opportunity.
Yeah. I have people tell me that there is a distinct difference in the products that you would use in a medical situation versus products you would use in recreational, and they don't cross borders very well. That some of the side effects on the recreational would not be desirable on the part of medical. And so the idea that you're committed to the medical from a business standpoint, because it's going to be a huge market, and it's a big market in the United States. Canada has total deregulation. Do they make a significant difference between medical and recreational?
There is a significant on the different strains and the different products. And so there absolutely is. And because you're being prescribed, and there has to be, because are you being prescribed it for pain? There's different cannabis there that keep you awake. There's different cannabis that put you asleep. So definitely.
Well, unfortunately, Irwin, we're almost to the end of this segment. Where can people follow your company and the progress you're making on so many different fronts?
So they can absolutely follow it on afria.com. On our website, our social media. Listen, we're out there. And again, the big thing is being somebody who's created a lot of natural organic food brands. To me, this is not about smoking recreational cannabis for a high. There's an enjoyment part of it here. But as you said, there's a big emphasis from myself personally just on the medical side too. And I think that's really important for adults, for kids, for, you know, whoever absolutely needs it. And there's a lot of training and education on it, because the first thing, if my 80-year-old mother, I said to her, I want you to have some cannabis for your arthritis. So you want me to smoke pot? No, I don't want you to smoke pot. I want you to take a medicine for it. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway.
Good. So thank you so much for joining us today, Irwin.
Thank you very much for having me. Have a great day.
Thank you. Now, if you missed any of this terrific interview with Irwin Simon of Tilray, go to W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section, and you can replay this show at your leisure and list a bunch of other stuff. We'll be right back. Hello, this is Dan Perkins from America's Cannabis Conversation, and I'm here to talk to you about CV Sciences, the company that developed the immune system support products called CV Acute and CV Defense. One of the questions I asked the company was, how safe and effective are these products? Recently, I interviewed Stuart Tonk on my show, and here is his response to my question.
Science supports it. CV Acute and CV Defense are backed by research cited by the World Health Organization for immune system challenges. It's safely used in hospitals. That's right, CV Acute is safely used in hospitals in Europe and in China.
If you want a productive immune system, you need to purchase both CV Defense and CV Acute. You can find out more information about both of these products at empoweryourself.info. Empower yourself and take charge of your response to COVID-19. You have the power to control yours and your family's health care. Welcome back to the conversation. Joining us today is Mr. Mike Regan, our money guy. And we thought, because of all of the volatility in all the markets, we thought today we would focus on the question, well, you know, I haven't really invested in cannabis anyway. I've been looking at it, but with all the volatility, what should I be doing? What should I be following if I want to consider the possibility? So, Michael, what's the advice that you give a novice investor who's never invested in cannabis, how they should look at this opportunity?
Thanks, Dan. Well, couple things are just sort of the standard things you would look for in any investment, regardless of what the whether it's cannabis or autos or you know, cheesecake, whatever business you're looking for. You know, you want to look for a good balance sheet, a good management team, and then sort of just a good business in general. But that sort of goes for sort of any business. When looking at cannabis specifically, the first thing you have to understand is that the Canadian stocks and the U.S. stocks, when I say that, I mean the companies that actually operate in Canada versus the companies that operate in the United States, regardless of where the stocks trade, they all trade in Canada. They're very, very different markets.
How are they different? How are they different, Michael?
So the Canadian market is federally legal, and at this point it is a market that's beset by oversupply of product, price pressure on the product, margin pressure for the companies as a result, and the companies that are there are basically trying to adjust their cost structures to operate profitably. In the U.S., in contrast, it's still federally illegal. And there's a bunch of they pay higher taxes as a result, but the operators that are there are typically more profitable and have a faster growing market with access to a larger market if there's additional legalization catalysts. So basically, if the main benefit for the U.S. is you are investing in the U.S. is you get that upside from incremental legalization or relief of pressures right now because of the federal illegality of cannabis in the U.S. Whereas the Canadian market, you're basically hoping that they can manage into a new industry and manage the margin expansion and cost cutting. And if the U.S. goes legal, they have access to a new market, but then they'll just be accessing a new market versus the American companies, which, because of the illegality, have a much higher cost of capital and other burdens that hopefully go away as it becomes more legal. And I can get into those next if you'd like.
So let's just stop for it and unpack a little bit of that. When the cannabis industry started in the United States legally, it was predominantly a mom and pop business because there was no way to build a company that could market across state lines. Still can't do that. But there's a new class, a relatively new class of equities called MSOs, or multiple state operators. And these are companies that have operations, independent operations in individual states, yet they're under a common umbrella. And so we're slowly, or are we slowly or rapidly moving away from the mom and pop into the model of multi-state operator? And then if we get relief from the Congress on the liabilities and the legality of this product, excuse me, are we going to see mom and pops disappear and multi-state operators will form a different concept than multi-states? They'll just be one holding company with operations in the states.
Well, it goes back to the market. So as you point out, in the U.S., you know, it's every market is different. So California is not the same as Colorado, which is not the same as Arizona, which is not the same as Canada. And it's the same thing for Canada, that Canadian operators don't really operate in the U.S. because it's still federally illegal. So it still is a very much fragmented business. As you point out, there are some companies, you know, most of the publicly traded ones are starting to basically own operations in each state. So the operations in each state are still separate, but they're owned by one company. And that model, you know, but in contrast, there are some that are very deep in one state. You know, Trulieve, for example, is public, and they're basically, they're expanding to other states now, but up until recently, they're basically only operating in Florida. So they went made a strategy of going deep and dominating one market versus, you know, having lots of operations in lots of states. But at the end of the day, you know, I'd rather have, basically want to dominate the markets you're in. So if you can be in multiple markets and dominate them, that's fine. You know, being the, you know, the number 15 or number 20 operator in lots of markets isn't as attractive as being, you know, sort of the higher, you know, 1, 2, or 3 operator in 1 or 2 markets. I think over time, most, at least most retailers and most sort of consumer branded companies are typically larger. So I think that will be, you know, the shift over time to that larger dominant model, but it will still probably have, like the beer industry, you'll still probably have a bunch of smaller craft operators as well. But, you know, the bulk of it will still be, will still probably consolidate to a high volume operator with scale. You know, if you have Budweiser, and then you've got lots of, you know, thousands of local craft breweries as well.
So if you look at the scenario that you're talking about, and we see deregulation and decriminalization of the marijuana product, are we likely to see whole new players come into this market that aren't in it now, big companies?
I think you definitely will. I think and that's basically sort of the long case of cannabis in general, is that it is still very, very early days, I think, for the legal cannabis industry in terms of additional states passing legalization efforts, and then the federal level eventually having to having to essentially change the current status of illegal status at a federal level of cannabis. I mean, at this point, you know, 76% of people live in an area or in a state that has at least medical cannabis legalized, and and much of the country, there's been polls about how it's very heavily now in favor of some kind of legalization. So when that happens, at this point, because it's federally illegal, the cost of capital is very high, because the industry in the U.S. can't access normal banking. Like, you can't go down to a bank and get a mortgage on your greenhouse, because most banks won't work with it, because it's still federal drug trafficking and there's too high a risk that they get charged with money laundering, technically.
Mm-hmm.
If the Safe Banking Act passes, that would open up, to basically protect the banks from who interact with this industry from from that issue. So then, you know, the cannabis companies would then pay normal rates for capital. And at this point, you know, loans are, you just automatically double whatever a normal company would pay just because it's still federally illegal. They also pay something called, they might pay much higher federal income taxes under a provision called 280E. And basically, because it's illegal, they essentially can't deduct lots of expenses that normal companies do. That results in effective tax rates of, you know, 50% on income or even higher. So if, presumably, if there's some kind of legalization, that goes away as well. And that's what I was saying, that the U.S. market is different than the Canadian market. If you have a U.S. company, they're basically thinking, I can't, you know, I got to pay 20% for a normal loan, and then I got to pay a 50% tax rate. That's a really tough environment to operate in. If you had incremental legalization, then all of a sudden those two things, if you basically don't have to deal with them anymore, then that's a huge benefit to that company that, you know, last week I couldn't get a loan, I had to pay a huge tax rate. This week the laws change and now I can get a loan and pay a lower tax rate. That's great. And that's sort of the upside for the U.S. companies.
So where do you see, as we get close to this election, on the other side, do you see any significant changes in the law on cannabis, regardless of who wins or loses and out of this coming Tuesday?
I think so in terms of cannabis, the Safe Banking Act actually already passed the House, but it was blocked in the Senate. So was probably actually more impactful than the presidency for cannabis, at least on that law, would be any changes in the Senate. There's two other acts, two other laws that are already in process called the MORE Act and the STATES Act that could also be moved forward. And they basically cover different things. The MORE Act has more of actual overall legalization versus the Safe Banking Act, basically allowing access to traditional banking. But generally, a blue Senate would be more favorable, I think, more favorable to cannabis. The Biden presidency might be more favorable. But the nice thing about it overall is it can still be argued as sort of a bipartisan issue. In terms of at least on that's a state, if you go into a state's rights issue on the right, that's sort of what the Safe Banking Act was going through, is more sort of let states, you know, the states are already just made this legal, let's resolve the conflict with the federal government on that. But if it's a, you know, blue presidency and a blue Senate, then the prospects for additional legalization is far, you know, far greater, I think.
Okay.
But it's politics, so who ultimately knows?
Right. Okay. So thank you for being with us today. We've been talking to Mike Regan, who's our money guy and a specialist in cannabis investing. And Michael, how do people get a hold of you and follow you?
You can read all the research I write on the cannabis industry at my website, mjresearchco.com. So MJ, the word research, CO.com.
If you didn't hear all of this interview with Mike, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com, and you can listen to this show and also other shows that Mike's has been on and other shows in the archive section. Get yourself up to date. Thanks for joining us at The Conversation. We'll be right back. This is your COVID-19 tip of the day, presented by CV Sciences, maker of CV Acute and CV Defense. There's a lot of misunderstanding and bad information out there about the vaccine, so I thought I'd take a moment and answer some of the questions that people have been asking about the vaccine. The first question is, how do I know which source of COVID-19 vaccine information are accurate? It can be difficult to know which sources of information you can trust. Before considering vaccine information on the internet, check that the information comes from a credible source and is updated on a regular basis. The CDC Vaccines and Immunization web content is researched, written, and approved by subject matter experts, including physicians, researchers, epidemiologists, and analysts. Content is based on peer-reviewed science. CDC leadership makes the final decision on the words, images, and links to best serve the information needs of the public. This has been your COVID-19 Tip of the Day, brought to you by CV Sciences, makers of CV Acute and CV Defense products.
Welcome back to the conversation. This is Dan Perkins, and joining us today is Mr. Cannabis, Big Mike. And we're going to have a conversation with him about some of the products, not that his advanced nutrients, but some of the products, the cannabis products, the pre-rolls that he's in the process of bringing out. So welcome back to the conversation, Big Mike.
Dan, it's always great to be back on the W420 Radio. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. So tell me about the Big Mike Special Blends. What are you doing there?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I have a line of products coming out first quarter of 2021. It's called Big Mike's Blends, and it's a line of pre-rolls, concentrates, and vape pens.
So where do you – I know you have a facility for your fertilizer and growing medium in Las Vegas and one up in, I think, in Oregon, and then you told us on your last appearance you're building a facility in Barcelona. Where do you build this – where do you manufacture and put together these cannabis products?
Right here in beautiful California, in Linwood, California.
Okay. And so that's – so and those products, tell us about – what the products are going to look like in Big Mike's Blend.
Oh, sure. These products are very unique because we use multiple strains to blend very specific cannabinoid and terpenoid profiles that give a very, very precise outcome. And then we also enhance that in some of the pre-rolls, they're infused where we put an extra THC. A, that's the acid form of THC, and we also use what's called high terpene extracts. It really makes it more flavorful and gives the outcome more of a very kind of like a rifle shot for what the patient is looking for.
So, the Big Mike's Blend. You mentioned all kinds of products. Are they only going to be available in California?
Right now, they're only going to be available in California. We will be licensing our technology globally as this marketplace grows.
You took the words right out, the question right out of my brain. I was going to ask it with the tremendous spread of demand across the country and around the world and growing and getting ready to probably explode dramatically. I wondered how you were going to take advantage of the global market, but you're going to build your products in California, test them and sell them in California, and then you're going to look for partners. And are you looking for like multi-state operators, or what are you going to be looking for?
Absolutely, multi-state operators. They don't have to be. You know, they could be the number one or number two player in any one of the states, and we will be talking to them.
So you'll set up the specifications of what has to be, how it has to be grown. I know this is probably a bad way to say this, Mike, but is this like a McDonald's franchise? You have to follow certain procedures and do things.
Well, yeah, sure. Well, here's my belief. My belief that in 2022 or 2023, cannabis is going to be federally legal. And when it becomes federally, they're going to have to, because we're going to be in this huge economic downturn. The MORES Act that the House just passed, they propose a 5% federal tax on cannabis. And so they're going to be, you know, they're going to need money, and so cannabis is going to be legal. And because of that, we'll be able to, there'll be, you know, interstate commerce, there'll be global commerce, and the whole playing field is radically going to change after 2023, and that's my belief. And so the doors will open up. Now, if I had to, sure, we can give them the strains, they can grow, we can provide the high terpene extracts because there's nothing psychoactive in there. You can ship those all around the world right now. There's not a restriction on them. There's not a restriction on, you know, say, well, what about taking the genetics over here or there? Well, with tissue cultures, there's no restrictions on tissue cultures. They can be sent all around the world right now. So there's a, if you will, a pathway to doing that right now, if you will, but it's going to become a lot easier in 2023. And I'm building everything up towards that big push in 2022 or 2023 when it becomes federally legal.
If you look at what's going on, the word that I'm hearing on the street is while the House bill was important, mm-hmm. the real thing that's going to cause a dramatic change in the marketplace on a global basis was what the UN did when they decided to pass the rules to decriminalize cannabis on a global basis. And surprisingly enough, the United States voted in favor of that. That's going to create, tremendous growth opportunities. And I'm wondering about the ability of the industry to be able to provide product. I know what happens like in Illinois and other places when they open up, everything's yeah. gone. They don't have mm-hmm. enough capacity. And then you've got some other places where they're slowing down. But mm-hmm. this pandemic created a huge change in cannabis, in the sense that people saw it as an essential service. But mm-hmm. I'm doing an interview later this week with a gentleman in Canada, which I really can't believe this happened. But apparently the cannabis authority in Canada gave him a license to actually sell cannabis products directly to the consumer. And it's the
there
first license that has been granted like that in Canada. But, you know, I've always thought that is the day coming where Amazon is going to be a distribution point for cannabis products.
It is for CBD. So I would think that when it's federally legal, they will probably allow that. But who knows? I mean, there's these restrictions on alcohol and tobacco advertising. They may do exactly the same for cannabis. We've yet to see what will happen.
Right. So what do you think from your standpoint as a business operator who's got a phenomenally growing business for decades, what are your challenges going forward with this explosion talked about?
Right, because the demand for cannabis is going up globally. That means the demand for – we're at the beginning of the value chain, so we're into fertilizer and genetics. So that is just expanding at a rapid rate, and it's expanding so fast I'm having difficulties keeping up with the demand for all our products. It's a good problem to have. It is a problem. I don't like being able to have to serve the store owners and the growers and ultimately the patients with a top quality product grown with our nutrients.
So, do you think that there are some people, Mike, who think that we don't need medical, that adult recreational can meet the needs of both recreational and medical, and the other people say the products are different. What do you think about whether we need two separate distribution systems?
We don't. To me, anyone who's using cannabis is a patient. People use cannabis for all sorts of reasons, and most of them have to do with making them feel better, so or thinking or enhancing some kind of a situation that they're in.
We find I've been studying a lot of research, Mike, and it looks like that the number one reason why people, regardless of age, are using cannabis is not for the high, it's for pain.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
And
the new patients that are coming in, most of it is for pain relief. And that patient will spend three times more money than the average recreational user. But back to the original question about rec, everyone to me using cannabis, medical or recreational, I don't make that distinction in my brain. I mean, I'm aware of it, but I believe that also because of taxation purposes, you're going to see everybody going to rec eventually, and what they call adult use. And that will be it. You'll be able to walk into a local, you know, 7-Eleven, and there'll be, you know, a stand with cannabis products on there that you'll be able to purchase just like alcohol or other products.
Well, we've only got a few minutes left. I want to take you to the future a little bit, because I want to follow on something that you were talking about. One of the other people who was on the first or second show when you first came on was a doctor who's doing a research project, now clinical trials, at Harvard Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. And he's working on using cannabis to treat pancreatic cancer. And he's having some initially great success. And he said to me, as I've continued to talk to him over the last year or so, he says to me that that something what you just said, and that is that he believes the day is coming when growers and developers like yourself are going to be able to grow products for the medical side to deal with very specific challenges. Do you think that's possible?
Yes, 100%. They're like the Harvard group that is studying that for pancreatic cancer. That's a flavonoid that they're working around that came was extracted out of cannabis, and very specific. Will, and that's more. We talked earlier about adult use, and we also talked about medical. This is, to me, pharmaceutical. And pharmaceutical is going to be laser focused, very, very specific ailments. And the what was it? The DEA just said they're now allowing people to have research licenses for cannabis. And the reason is that the pharma companies want to get cracking on a lot of these different things that cannabis can relieve. And you know, that it costs a lot of money to do that. It's going to cost $50 million to $300 million for every one of the claims that they're making. And that's the realm of big pharma. I mean, and they will be definitely going to be involved with very specific products for very specific ailments.
So that when you were talking earlier in this show, you were talking about different strains of cannabis. Is that how you're going to custom make them through the strains?
Oh, right. So we blend the different strains together because we're looking for a very very precise cannabinoid and terpenoid profiles. And once we figure out the strains, we test them, we blend them together. Also, what it gives the patient is a much bigger cannabinoid and terpenoid profile. The people who have medicated with our pre-rolls go, wow, these things are just absolutely incredible, and they love them. And now we've taken it to even a higher level by using high terpene extracts along with blended strains, multiple strains. We use anywhere from 4 to 6 strains we blend together for each outcome.
Well, I'm sorry to say that we're out of time. It's again, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I learn so much from you every time you're on. Tell our audience, I know you can't get your Big Mike products yet in California, but you said sometime in the first quarter. We'll have it back in the first quarter when you relaunch that. But for your other growing products, how do they reach you and follow you and follow your products?
Sure. You know, they can look at Big Mike's Blends up on the internet. They'll find it. There is a website there. For the fertilizer products, it is advancednutrients.com. And of course, if you want to, you can follow me on Instagram. You just type in Big Mike and the search thing, and you'll find me there. And on that Instagram, you'll be exposed to Big Mice Blends, Advanced Nutrients, our hemp products, plus a plethora of information about the plant itself.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's great being on the show, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. So if you missed any of this great interview with Mike, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section, and look for the show with Big Mike. He's on a couple of other times. Listen to other shows, and you'll learn a lot more about what is a very important industry to our country and to a lot of Americans who need help. We'll be right back.
Introducing CV Defense for daily immune support with PEA. PEA backed by 6 double-blind clinical trials. Reishi Mushroom Extract. A proprietary blend of immune-supporting ingredients. Non-GMO, gluten-free, vegan,
exclusively from CV Sciences. Go to empoweryourself.info.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety, or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com. W420RadioNetwork.com.